you can be loyal to your craft without necessarily being loyal to your employer. Mm. Because the research actually shows that the happiest, most passionate employees aren't the ones who necessarily followed their passion into a job. It's those who have done the job long enough to actually become good at what they do.
Right.
And that is what, like, passion actually follows you if you focus on your skills first. Daniel Pink, who is an author and speaker, once gave a TED Talk called The Puzzle of Motivation, and he calls out that there's this mismatch between what science knows and what business does. Hmm. And I think you're highlighting a key point. Because if businesses wanted to retain people for longer, it would help them become good at what they do, help them become best in class at what they do. They would focus more on personal development, industry networking,
right,
helping people build the career capital that they need. But because they don't offer that, employees have to leave and start over at new companies. And there's a cost to constantly onboarding too.
Yep.
So we could just solve this together if everybody just kind of acknowledged what the science is saying, what the research is saying, instead of doing the thing that is out of a scarcity or fear-based mindset, which is trying to keep people in jobs forever.
Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Julian.
And I'm Kirsten. And today we're talking about how following your passion impacts your financial life.
Yeah, I can already tell this is going to be a good one.
Yeah.
It's one of the few big problems a lot of people still struggle with detangling. So I'm looking forward to seeing what comes of this discussion.
I love that you said detangling because I just took out my braids. And
I think that's why it's top of mind.
Detangling.
I never used that word before, but because I've watched you up close detangle bundles.
Yeah.
I'm like, that word is like stuck in my head.
Yeah.
It's like spaghetti.
I think you're right because passion is one of those vague labels that gets slapped on everything that people really, really, really enjoy.
Yeah.
And it just sets such a high bar because there's this visual associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you were to read the words, "they kissed passionately,"
oh, I'm
in
hearing
a book.
The song in my mind, you know?
Yeah. You have an image, you got a song, it's intense, it's breathy, it's maybe a little sloppy, like, I don't know, whatever.
It's passionate, baby.
It's passionate. But even if you're not talking about romance, like, if we just focus on general excitement, I think people still think of, like, Tom Cruise jumping on Oprah's couch.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
High levels of passion.
Yeah.
And so if that's your baseline, and you're maybe an introvert or you just don't even roll like that.
Yeah.
It's no wonder that people feel lost when advisors tell them stuff like follow your passion.
Right.
Pick a career that you're passionate about.
Right. Yeah. Because even as you said that, I was like, I remember those moments. I was like, I don't know how I feel. I don't feel about anything like that.
Right.
You know, because like to your point, passion has a particular sort of connotation to it. But you know what's interesting? I've never been told to my memory, I've never been told to follow my passion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That was not the mantra in my home. Even when I think about like high school guidance counselors or mentors, like I've never been told to, you know, you just got to follow your passion. Like that. Yeah, that was never, like I didn't hear that life advice until I was much older. Hmm. And even when I heard it, I thought, like, that's interesting.
Because
it just felt like an odd sense of freedom and a really interesting way to live your life.
Yeah.
Oh, even like a flex almost, like, you know, just follow your, really? Wow. Just follow your passion.
Yeah.
But in a strange way, I kind of understood what they meant.
Yeah.
But I was just like, I mean, I think I knew immediately that that's something that you're just saying. But like, let's be honest, like that's not what the real world does. What about you?
Yeah, I've been told to follow my passion by a bunch of strangers.
Okay.
I mean, like every leadership book I've ever read, every executive coach, every viral social media clip is just some version of like, follow your passion, find your calling, it's a destiny, whatever. But luckily, I was raised by a very pragmatic Black man who constantly overrode all of that advice and replaced it with his own, which was basically, pick a life.
Oh,
he was always challenging me to think about what kind of lifestyle I wanted. Did I want to travel? Did I want to wake up and see a view from my window? And even the smallest things, like, do you want to drive to work with heated seats during the cold winter months? It was very, very specific, but that's how we narrowed my career options down.
Yeah.
Even when I found things that I was naturally good at, like sales, he would guide me towards companies and roles that actually offered career paths and places where my ideas could be implemented so that I wouldn't be trading in the lifestyle I wanted, you know, for the things that I felt good about.
Shout out to Blue. Blue is what we affectionately call, that's her father's nickname. But yeah. Yes, I didn't have that.
Yeah.
I was raised in, like, you know, I felt like it was standard advice, you know, go to school, get a good job. And I just assumed that that was pretty standard advice. I couldn't imagine a world where other people were being told to follow your passions, because in my mind, following your passions just meant basketball. And there were very clear, right, natural responses to that, which, right, is like, okay, that's not going to happen. And so, yeah, that's how I was framing up what passion meant. Yes. I didn't realize that you could have passions in other things. It was like, well, clearly you must mean basketball.
Right.
but, you know, off the top, like, I'm not suggesting that, like, the advice that I was given was, like, good or even better or, you know, than people who were given different advice, because I've changed my careers multiple times. But yeah, I do believe that the advice I was given, like, there was an inherent built-in acknowledgement of the role that, like, earning potential, mm-hmm, plays in career advice, you know,
yeah,
even though it wasn't very specific, there's just, like, yeah, this built-in component that's like, all right, you can, you know, do what you want, but,
right,
you know, just make sure that whatever you do is enough to help support the lifestyle that you want.
Absolutely. I think you're right. I think if I had been encouraged to pursue my passion, like many of my classmates were, I would have ended up on a totally different path.
What do you think you would have been?
I don't know. I was just thinking, like, I probably would have skipped college altogether because I was very passionate about making money when I was, you know, at the age where I needed to decide if I was going to college. I had a little part-time job. Even when I say that, like, I thought my little part-time job at the mall was making money.
Oh, yeah.
So it was like, oh,
it was
nah,
at the time.
I know. I'm going to do this. Like, mm-hmm, F college. I'm just going to keep working, you know, selling shoes at the mall. And I probably would have also floated around because, like you, I'm multi-passionate. I was, yep, passionate about a lot of things. And I would have bounced around because this hypothesis that I need to find my passion would have made me assume that there's this magic job waiting for me somewhere.
Yep.
I just need to find it, yep, you know? And if I don't feel the magic at any particular place, I need to keep searching. I would, yep, have basically treated my career like some sort of treasure map instead of, mm, like a maze where there's kind of one way in and one way out.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. Okay, so let's dive in. This podcast episode, let's start with this. This podcast episode is partially inspired by a recent article that we read in NPR. It was entitled, "It's Okay to Not Be Passionate About Your Job."
Yes.
The authors were Ruth Tam and Sylvie Douglas. The article was also a podcast episode, which is an NPR-sponsored podcast called Life Kit. So you can check that out on your own time. But both of them were actually inspired by a recent book. The book is called The Trouble with Passion, How Searching for Fulfillment at Work Fosters Inequality. And it was written by Erin Sech. The last name is spelled C-E-C-H if you want to look that up. But Erin Sech, she's an associate professor of sociology at the University of Michigan, go Wolverines. And basically, they're diving into that age-old advice. Maybe you've heard it, of course. Follow your passions. Or there's like remixes to it where... what is it? If you do something you love, you'll never work a day in your life. Yeah, well, that's my favorite
one. You'll never work a day in your life.
You'll never work a day in your life. If you follow your passions, you'll never work a day in your life. I'm like trying to hold like the laughter as I'm saying it, because like deep eye roll. It's like this, that it. I mean, listen, I'm sure that is true for some people, but I've always known work to feel like work. After a while.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it probably doesn't feel like work for the people who are saying that. I guess it really depends on what you're using for your definition of work.
Even now, basketball players are very clear to yeah. show you the behind the scenes and say, this is my job.
Right.
Like, I, you know, athletes, like, they're yeah. all telling you, this is my job. This is what I do for a living. But there's more to me. I'm even more than an athlete. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's a bit of a broader deconstruction of that advice right now.
You're right. Even something that doesn't feel like work initially eventually begins to feel like work.
Yep.
We have a friend who works as a sound engineer every day. So instead of walking into a cubicle with a computer and, you know, windowless office, his office is the set of some of your favorite TV shows.
Right.
Sometimes that takes him to different countries. Sometimes he works at night. He mixes and mingles with famous people and directors. And as an outsider, I'm always like, man, what a dream. Like, that can't feel like work. You walk in and there's like a spread of food that you can eat off of all day. And it just can't feel like work because, like, you don't have the same environmental cues as I do to say, this is work. I'm in front of a laptop.
Right.
But it's definitely still work. Mm-hmm. And he constantly reminds us that it's still work because the underlying labor agreement is the thing that makes it work. Not your emotional state, not how you feel about what you're doing. It's the agreement between you and your employer that you're going to do this and I'm going to give you money in exchange.
Yeah.
And if you get those confused, you become vulnerable like the article is, you know, expressing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to share my version of that before we dive into the article. But there was a period of time in my corporate career where I was responsible for resort hotels.
Remember that?
And I would travel. It was part of work. I'd have to travel to resorts. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you travel to a resort for work, it's not the same.
Nobody.
You know, I could take some pictures, but like if you're the only person there in long pants and you're actually not outside at the beach,
yeah,
you're the only person
drink.
Using the boardroom. Like it's not the same. So obviously you get some downtime, but you know, I totally understand that. Okay. So in the article, Setch introduces what she calls the passion principle, which immediately made me think of Janet Jackson's pleasure principle. Because I just watched that documentary, which was okay. But anyway, she's saying that there's nothing wrong with finding fulfillment. So she separates it, right? There's nothing wrong with finding fulfillment at work, but passion, as we kind of alluded to, goes a bit further than that because it implies that you'll do like whatever it takes for your career, which unfortunately has a tendency to lead you to being exploited, undervalued, and inequality in the job market. And I 100% agree with that. But it's such a complex dance, though, because you're also kind of rewarded for exhibiting passion at work. And it can be the thing that even differentiates you or that you use to define your personal brand. I remember even when I used to communicate who I was, there was a lot of passion exuded in that story because it was, you know, a family story. And this is where my family is from. And my father worked for that company before it was this time. And now here I am sort of fulfilling this legacy. This is what makes me different from everyone else. And like, it was the story that helped me progress to my job. But I will also say is one of the things that actually pigeonholed me and led me to some degree to being taken advantage of.
Yeah, I think those underlying conflicts are exactly why people call corporate politics a game. Because it is a bunch of back and forth, ping-ponging of conflicting things that you're rewarded for, but also can be penalized for if you go too far. Because I think you're right. You absolutely earn what Cal Newport calls career capital, which is basically a term for all of the skills, credentials, connections, testimonies that you collect along the way. You earn that if you're passionate.
Right.
And if you had to rank the value of traits that people use to describe you as an employee, passion is worth its weight in gold, right? Particularly if you're in a modern career where you have some level of autonomy and you're not just like doing the same repetitive task over and over again. You'd much rather be called passionate than like disciplined, on time, kind. All of those things are still valuable. But if you get the testimony that calls you passionate on LinkedIn, you want to put that endorsement at the top of the list versus the one that says you are always on time and you turn things in and your clients liked you.
Yeah, I'm sure the engineers are saying, actually, you know, I know. No one has room or time for that. Or the lawyers are like, you know, the last thing I want is a partner, passionate partner. I want the person to get in and get out. But no, to your point, it's complex. And I think the takeaway here, like most things, that it depends, right? And I think it's okay to show your cards, to show your passion, but you don't want to show them all. You kind of want to keep some close to the chest. Which kind of makes me think of like, it's like relationships. Like when you first meet someone, it's great if you show them that you like them or that you care about them. But obviously, you know, there's a time and place for when you want to exude passion. If you're doing that all at once and all the time, you actually run the risk of turning those people off. And even worse, you may put yourself in a situation where those people feel like they can take you for granted. And so obviously that happens a lot in the workforce. Which brings me to another point. So there's actually been a lot of talk about this in recent years, and there's even been some data that supports it. So in 2014, there was a Forbes report that showed that staying at the same employer for over 2 years, on average, led employees to earn about 50% less over their lifetime.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to say that again. So a Forbes report showed that staying at the same employer for over 2 years, on average, led employees to earn about 50% less over their lifetime.
And more recently,
just 2 years.
I would have thought that threshold was 10.
Yeah, not 10.
I used to work with someone who was like, well, after year 10, you're a lifer. So like, you really need to be making a decision between year 7 and 10 about what you want to do.
So it's interesting because when you think about when we met and that was like the beginning of the peak of our corporate careers, that was 2012. And I feel like that advice was actually just starting to take heed, right? Mm-hmm. And so even this data here is from 2014. And I think at that point, people started to connect the dots and started actually measuring upward mobility. So there might actually be something there. But there's another set of data that I want to layer on top of this. And this is actually from a survey on LinkedIn, and it revealed that opinions around job hopping had changed dramatically over the years. Specifically, around 64% of workers believed it was acceptable and even beneficial to job hop.
Yep.
They didn't really say, well, how that differed versus, let's say, 10 years before, but today, yeah, but it's safe to say.
I remember they used to talk about
it was
talk
a given.
About millennials, like, oh, they're just job hoppers. Like, it was almost like a bad thing.
Correct.
So to have 64% of people saying it could be beneficial is a shift.
Well, it is predominantly still millennials. We're just a little older now. So
that was
the second layer of data here. And so they basically highlighted the generational differences. And they basically said that millennials were twice as likely as non-millennials. So they were looking at both ends, both boomers and Gen Z, and saying that millennials in particular were twice as likely to job hop than any other generational group. But to believe that it was actually worth it financially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think what millennials realize is that you can be loyal to your craft without necessarily being loyal to your employer.
Mm.
Because the research actually shows that the happiest, most passionate employees aren't the ones who necessarily followed their passion into a job. It's those who have done the job long enough to actually become good at what they do.
Right.
And that is what, like, passion actually follows you if you focus on your skills first. Daniel Pink, who is an author and speaker, once gave a TED Talk called The Puzzle of Motivation. And he calls out that there's this mismatch between what science knows and what business does.
Hmm.
And I think you're highlighting a key point. Because if businesses wanted to retain people for longer, it would help them become good at what they do, help them become best in class at what they do. They would focus more on personal development, industry networking,
right,
helping people build the career capital that they need. But because they don't offer that, employees have to leave and start over at new companies. And there's a cost to constantly onboarding too.
Yep.
So we could just solve this together if everybody just kind of acknowledged what the science is saying, what the research is saying, instead of doing the thing that is out of a scarcity or fear-based mindset, which is trying to keep people in jobs forever.
Yeah, you know, I'm team acknowledge the data. It's just too long of a hashtag to
yeah, that's never going
to catch on. But I'm working on it. I'm going to shorten it. Okay, so the article also called out something I found that was really interesting, which was how new the idea of prioritizing passion was, which made tons of sense. So basically, it's an idea that really only took hold in like my lifetime. So the 80s and the 90s. But like back in the 1940s and 50s, the idea of following your passion wasn't expected or promoted widely. Like the focus was on doing whatever you needed to do to provide stability for your family. And this made me think about the environment we're in today, where so many people are in student loan debt. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think it's safe to say that there's certainly a correlation between that and this advice and how popular and how new and how really rampant that advice is. And now as working adults, a lot of people with all of this student loan debt, I think the more people need the money and the stability, the more they're going to like deprioritize the role passion plays in their work, which leads to an entirely different mess. You've got people that like came in super passionate and now they're kind of 10 or 20 years in and they're just kind of realizing like, oh my gosh.
I'm gonna chase the money instead.
I'm gonna switch it up. And now you've got this huge brain drain and it just feels like this has the potential to get pretty messy. What do you think?
I mean, first of all, look at you adding the anthropological lens to the episode. That's usually my role to go to cavemen in history, but you know, maybe I'll throw in a food analogy or something to even the score. But I think you're right. I think you're right, especially now because we're seeing so many educators and healthcare workers looking for new career paths. And these are typically the people who feel called to their profession.
Yep.
But I think wages have been flat for several decades. And the last 2.5 years has really allowed people to abandon their endless optimism about it.
Yes.
And abandon their optimism about how far passion can take them and instead just focus on survival to ensure that they can afford what they need.
Yes.
All right, we're going to go to break and we'll be right back. All right. So going back to what you said about the 40s and 50s, I do wonder if the number of women entering the workforce is what ushered in this message around passion. Because as you know, women started working to replace the positions of soldiers who were in the war in the 40s and 50s. And then the feminist movement emerged in the 60s. And that just brought a lot more emphasis on choice. And whenever you're communicating to historically marginalized people about what choices they have, we tend to focus on the positive feelings because that's the way to acknowledge that, hey, you're empowered. So we'll just say things like, do whatever makes you happy or just marry the person you love. When realistically, there are a lot more feelings and emotions involved in these decisions besides the positive ones.
Yeah.
But we oversimplify and just focus on the positive because we want to create movement.
You know what? I don't know, but I certainly think that there's definitely a correlation because if you think about a single earning household, let's say there are two adults there and the woman is staying from home. And then to your point, something happens and that person decides to pursue a job. Right. And let's say it's completely voluntary. You may not necessarily want to push that person or advise them to get a job based on necessity. Like at that point, it actually
is. If the expenses are covered.
If the expenses are covered, like income potential or earning potential is not necessarily the primary driver. So I would imagine that it probably did have something to do with that. That's making me think about what that's going to mean. Going back to what I was saying before, like, all right, well, now the tables are turned and you've got so many people who are in debt. No one's going to pursue jobs that require boatloads of passion, which I think is really, really concerning. Mm. Okay, so going back to the article, the last part that I found was also interesting was the role that passion played in perpetuating inequality. And I really appreciated this call out on how the advice of following your passion may be true for some, but not all. And I think in particular, they mentioned how low-income or first-generation college students may not have the financial safety net to comfortably take heed to that advice. And I think that's true. Mm-hmm. People with wealthier families are much more likely to be stable, and their families aren't likely relying on them to provide income today or in the future. And so as a result, they're much more inclined to actually pursue their passions or to not prioritize earning potential over other factors that might influence their career path. I want to quote directly from the article. And they said, people who work in education, healthcare, social work, journalism, nonprofits, and other fields that prioritize passion are known for their long hours and their devotion to a shared mission. But conflating passion with working overtime can lead to outcomes that erode that very mission, like burnout, resentment, and resignation. If you're a teacher, it's one thing to be kind, considerate, helpful, and attentive to a child, and it's another thing to perform that work as though that's the soul or core piece of one's identity. End quote. This is definitely a recurring theme and something that we've touched on in previous podcast episodes. And so I appreciate them kind of expanding the careers. We predominantly focus on teachers, but they've called out healthcare, social workers, journalism. And even as they were saying it, I am genuinely envisioning the people in our lives that I know, some of who may be listening right now, that are struggling with this very same conundrum. So I would encourage you all to not just listen to this podcast episode, share it with some friends, go to this article, read it, share that with some friends, and really get the ball turning or the wheels turning, whatever that saying is, so that you can start thinking about how you might be able to pivot if necessary, especially if you're dealing with some of the negative outcomes of passion that they called out, like burnout, resentment, and some of those other things.
Yeah, I think it goes back to misaligned incentives. And now we have enough examples where following your passion didn't lead to success.
Yeah.
And that challenges this dominant narrative of passion being something that, again, is destined, and certain careers being a calling. We always say that one of the things that gets in the way of progress is this constant repeating of old story. Mm. If you think about television, they're called tropes in that world.
Yes.
They're so familiar that if I listed a few, you'd be like, oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. It could be things like, you know, a couple who breaks up but remains super close friends, or the nagging wife and goofy husband, or my favorite, the serial killer who is so hot or so smart that we take compassion for him and we're super interested in their lives. Mm-hmm. Like, meanwhile, if there was a killing spree in your neighborhood, you're not sitting there watching the news wondering if you and the psychopath share the same interests in, you know, music and art.
Right.
But if on TV we've been taught that if there is a character who has an evil side, we must get to know him better, right?
Yeah.
So for the first time with careers, we're seeing that people are going beyond the surface. We see doctors who are speaking out and saying, yo, this is not an episode of ER. Like, people are not dating up in here. People die on the table every day. I haven't eaten lunch. I can't hug my kids when I get home. And the same for teachers, saying they're burned out, tired of carrying the weight of little young lives on their shoulders, and then not even getting funding for the basics of their classroom.
Or even support from the
parents. Or support, right? Yeah. People are speaking up, and it's so, so important to realize that whatever you're feeling, you are certainly not alone, and you're probably not even in the minority.
Yeah.
So keep telling your truth.
Yeah, yeah. I think that there's another layer to this, which is that so much of this, and this isn't to kind of protect the people who are kind of holding us back, but I'm just kind of adding my own perspective on this, because I remember when I was a chef, and then I remember when I wanted to leave the kitchen and move to the front of the house, which is a term to describe basically the service side, like wait staff and bar staff, management. I remember when I was a waiter and then I wanted to leave that and move into corporate. I remember when I was in corporate and in operations, I wanted to move into marketing. And my point is, like, I've jumped from one thing to another, and every step of the way I was met with resistance. And I think part of that, and I'm sharing this to say that while I was able to compartmentalize my passion and not struggle so much with redefining myself, what I learned is that throughout the way, there were still people who really just kind of wanted you to keep doing what they knew you to do, because that's what their brain's telling them. Like, no, this is what you do. This is who you are.
Right.
And so it kind of speaks to how hard this is. So I'm empathizing with a lot of our listeners out there who want to move on but are really struggling, because even beyond themselves, they're going to have to deal with a lot of the other people who will also see them one way, and they may not necessarily be able to confront that, and it sort of allows them to kind of still pigeonhole themselves, and as a result, it has a downstream impact on their earning potential. It's complicated, but
I think one of the biggest problems people have is that they can't imagine telling a different story about themselves than the one that they've told themselves for the last 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
So my advice is to think of your career as this dynamic story that you control. Imagine your favorite director, whether it's Steven Spielberg, Ava DuVernay, Wes Anderson, whoever
Ava's
it is.
Ava's a great example.
You know,
you might look at her and say that she's been doing this her entire life. And she's, like, if I'm not mistaken, like, pretty new to filmmaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my advice was to pretend that you're them, right?
Yeah.
Every summary of your job can be told in different ways. There are many truths to a story. I could have been a cashier at Target, but I can tell that story four different ways depending on what the next role is.
Right.
So if you don't know how to tell your story from different angles, then the one version that you have on your resume is the one that will control you for the rest of your life.
Yep.
As I'm saying this, I'm like, gosh, we should do a podcast on this so I don't go completely off topic for this podcast. I'll note it because I think this is such an important skill that you can look at a job and describe it from multiple angles to appeal to the next job.
Yeah. Yeah. I think people need to ask themselves also, like, whether or not they're happy with the imbalance of power within the system that they're operating within. And again, when we're talking about passion and the likelihood that people who are passionate and hyper passionate are oftentimes the first or the easiest to be taken advantage mm-hmm. of, is because they know that you're willing to do whatever it takes. Yeah. This is who you are. You wouldn't dare leave. You wouldn't dare think about or imagine yourself differently. And I think even when you think about like some of the structural things that play a role in this, like when you, and by this I mean looking at the power imbalance between employees and employers. There's this expectation, for example, that you have to give 2-week notice,
right?
Even though most employers can fire you without a reason,
right?
You're in an at-will state, like. But we accept that as normal. This is the power imbalance,
and we actually go above and beyond that.
Of course, we do.
There are many people who
we're still trying to excel.
Get 4 weeks.
You know
what?
I'm going to give you 4 weeks because I'm that good of an employee, right? Yeah. So I think a lot of this is really a matter of like retraining your mind. Still being committed to doing great work, playing nice, but making sure that you're able to compartmentalize those things so that you don't self-impose earning limitations on yourself.
Yes.
Right? So if you want to earn more, to save more and invest more, you have to be willing to go against the grain a little bit. I think most of the people I know who've done this well are doing just fine. Like they've left wherever they were. They don't do that thing anymore. And they're doing just fine, right?
Yeah.
It's not like this catastrophic loss. Relationships don't fall away.
Nope.
Like, and the people that you leave behind aren't looking at you with disdain,
right?
Because you've left. It's like, oh, I can't mess with you no more because you left.
It actually allows them to focus on the other parts of your life.
They just move on. They just move on.
That too.
Everyone just moves on.
That too.
And obviously we know where this conversation could go. I'm not even going to go there in terms of like loss of life, but that's what happens, y'all. So don't let that get in the way of what you're doing. Don't let your passion be the sacred cow, this thing that you're unwilling to let go of in order to earn more money.
Ooh, I mean, was that your final thought? Like, wow.
Yeah, because I'm not gonna be able to do that again. So I'm gonna say that was my final thought.
Messing up the program.
What about you?
All right. So I'll give my final thought, which I guess is the final thought.
Yeah, you do that.
So I recently read this article about the flaws of the four-day work week, which was not a good article. There's like a whole propaganda machine.
Oh, I think I
of
saw
all
that
of these
article.
Articles about like how going back to work is not so bad.
Yeah, I saw that article.
The challenges. There was one about air cleanliness at home is worse than air cleanliness at work, like air quality.
Look at you being like, media literate.
I know.
It's like, oh, this feels suspicious.
Yeah, this feels like it was written by an office air conditioning.
Exactly.
But anyway, one of the flaws in the article that the writer quoted was someone saying that squeezing work into 4 days meant that they had less time for small talk and daydreaming on the clock, which was such a stark reminder for me that many people have overemphasized the role that work plays in their life just because they're there all the time.
Yes.
So my final thought is actually reemphasizing what Sheck calls diversifying your meaning-making portfolio. Basically, her advice is instead of drawing all of your passion from one place, ask yourself, what are the things that excite me outside of paid employment? How can I invest time, energy, and attention in cultivating passion in that space? Literally go through and write the list. And I would encourage anyone to do this exercise to make sure that you're not outsourcing things that you should be doing on your own to the workplace that isn't loyal to you.
I love that.
All right. Well, I guess since you're did your final thought, I'll just jump to the end.
Yeah.
So thank you
for welcome.
Listening.
You're
not you.
Streamline.
Thank you, listener.
Oh, okay.
For listening.
You're still welcome, though.
To another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. If you want to practice displaying passion outside your 9-to-5, you know where you can start. Right there on that ratings and review page, and leave us a passionate paragraph about what you enjoy about this podcast.
Okay, alliteration.
Passionate paragraph. It don't even have to be a paragraph. It can just be like a sentence or two. We will see y'all next week. Bye.